Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly, Broken Token fires half their staff. Ooh, actually, it's more than half.
Okay.
They're a tiny company, though. Duncan Rhodes' paint series.
Okay.
Ed Greenwood's new setting, 4-5-E.
Okay.
And Avatar Legends, $10 million Kickstarter.
It's 10 now. It's 10. Last time I checked, it was 9. Wow. Okay.
Keeps on going.
Yep.
So let's start with probably the ugliest story in tabletop.
Avatar? Oh, the broken token. Sorry. Okay.
Avatar. Well, yeah. That's pretty ugly. We'll save that for later. Broken Token. So the CEO of Broken Token steps down.
Okay.
But not before laying off half of the staff. 13 of, I think, their 21 employees.
Wow. Okay. So yeah. More than half. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Much more than half. And this follows allegations of sexual abuse with in a relationship with an employee. And so, hey, CEOs, maybe don't date within your company, especially when your company's like 24 people.
Right, right.
that would
not,
be
not knowing the situation here. Okay, like I can
I get some
see
details,
where that's going. Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, details. But I'm wondering why that led to the firing of 13 people.
But. Well, I'll catch up on that. I think we talked, maybe I talked to myself about this before. But Greg Spence will no longer head the company, and he's handing over duties to Kelsey Royer. Will maintain a supporting role and will probably benefit financially still from, you know, the company, from owning and being involved in the company. So this all stems from a post on Medium that happened on August 18th from Ashley Taylor, who was an employee of the company. Okay. And she accused the CEO of sexual assault, mental and emotional abuse over several years. Mm. And the name of the post was "Speaking Up to Protect Others." And the motivation, she had been silent, obviously, for a long time, for years. And then when she found out it was happening to other people in the company, said, I have to say something. And of course, immediately the CEO said, none of these allegations are true. And, you know, everything was consensual. We're all good here. Even though some of the things she claimed about him trying to figure out how to compensate her without paying her a salary and putting her up in an apartment, like there's all these like weird details that made this like, this is just innocent consensual stuff seem a little scary.
Far-fetched, right.
Okay. Yeah. So immediately after these accusations happened, Gloomhaven's creator, Isaac Childress, Blades in the Dark publisher, Evil Hat said, hey, we're done with these guys. And so, Gloomhaven is in a huge Kickstarter now where they were going to include Broken Token Trays as a level or an add-on, for Frosthaven. And they just, sorry, we can't do this. There's no way to replace it in time. We can't support this company after what
And I guess Evil Hat use Broken Token to produce like the Fate?
Possibly, yeah, like right. Okay. Yeah, because they're all doing – so Broken Token, I think, mostly does like laser cut trays and things. And they do them to specs for the game boxes. So you can have like a wooden insert in a box.
Oh, maybe they're Dresden Files co-op board game or something like that.
It could be. Possibly. Yeah, yeah. Right. So because of – so that's what causes the layoffs is they lost huge contracts. So now there's just not – a need for that many employees. So they're really, you know, hanging on to what they've got, hoping to weather the storm, changing leadership and hoping that the, you know, the reputation of the company survives, but who knows?
Right. Huh. That's a tough position, I guess, for a company to be in because on the one hand, I think customers kind of have to take a stand and be like, nope, we're not supporting a company that does that. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, if the CEO or if the person responsible actually steps down, doesn't continue to benefit financially, which this might not be the case, should customers remain loyal? Like, okay, we liked your business.
Mm-hmm.
You seem to have taken steps to address this problem.
Right.
Okay, maybe you can't just do it right away,
mm-hmm.
but if Broken Token actually has addressed stuff,
will
people go back? Do they deserve to have people go back?
Right.
Customers?
But there's no admission of anything.
Right.
You know, so it's a little bit difficult. And Yeah, there wasn't an open like, yeah, this was inappropriate. You know, there wasn't anything to address. And thinking about like the situation of that employee, I mean, this may have been her very first, you know, job in the game industry, right. And endangering this is like, well, I'm basically going to be blacklisted from this industry that I love if I bring up any problems with this, you know, relationship gone bad. So yeah, it's a very very frustrating thing, and it's just like, just don't do it. Just I mean, you have it's what did they call it in Japan, like power abuse, like
power harassment.
Yeah, so always like, you know, the positions, you know, positions of authority, yeah, it, that you know, you don't, you know, aim at
employees. You shouldn't.
That you can actually really affect their careers, and yeah, it's just like that would. And yeah, with a tiny company like this, and obviously they're doing trade shows and stuff, so there's hotels and stuff. Just don't.
Run it like a business, please.
Exactly. Yeah. So we'll see what happens to them. And I don't think it would be that hard for another company to step in. Like what they're doing is not some secret, you know, technology that nobody has. It's just somebody would have to kind of step into that position. So we'll see where the broken token ends up falling.
Which side it ends up falling on.
Yes, right. All right. But Warhammer Master Painter, Duncan Rhodes. So I don't know if you remember on Warhammer TV, kind of the face of the painting tutorials was Duncan Rhodes. And he, I don't know the details or anything, but just kind of suddenly left in 2019. Perfect timing, like pre-pandemic, set up his own Duncan Rhodes Academy YouTube channel and started to do... Still doing some Games Workshop, but, you know, kind of branching out into all wargaming and, you know, kind of reinforcing the techniques that he was working on it, but doing things, refining things a little bit more. So, you know, I think Games Workshop had that just real basic structure that they wanted him to follow.
And plus, you know, in Games Workshop, you could only ever paint Games Workshop stuff.
Right.
Which, I mean, if you work for Games Workshop, fair enough.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Yeah, and if you got it for free, then hey, why not?
Hey, Games Workshop employee with that, well, like massive 40 or 60% discount, it might as well have been free because that's where most of my paycheck went. It was payday, and I walked into the store with a whole bunch of new stuff and being like, that was bad. Anyway.
And ramen noodles. For nice. But a saying that he would always use in the tutorials is two thin coats is better than one thick coat. And that happens to be the name of his paint line. So in cooperation with another veteran of Games Workshop, they are working on a paint line which will include 60 colors, washes, and metallics. So yeah, we'll see what Roger Yates is the person that he's working with. So they founded his, and it's Translantic Games is who they're working with to produce the paints, the dropper bottles, and we'll see how that goes. So yeah, so 6 metallics, 6 washes, and 48 color triads in 48 in 18 triads.
Okay, cool.
So they're gonna do
base light shade, base coat light, highlight and shade.
So to kind of make it easier, maybe, you know, save them, makes it kind of like what Games Workshop does. You know, they'll have like these three colors kind of go together. Really? When you're doing reds or you're doing greens or whatever.
I didn't know Games Workshop had done that. All I knew is with the last time, in a long time, I tried to purchase Games Workshop paint, I had no clue what I was looking at, because there's like there's base, then there's the technical paint, there's like the wash or whatever. I'm like looking at all these different paints going. Then I looked at the price and said, I'm all for more and affordable, especially more affordable options of paint, because $10 for about half the size of a dropper bottle is not cool.
It's really really pricey. So we'll see. So you know, this is paints developed from scratch. So like the pigment levels and everything are going to be kind of up to their tastes and their standards. So they're not putting a label on existing paints, like something we heard about before, the prismatic paints that WizKids is doing are just rebranded Vallejo paints. And they've already planned a second wave of paints. So they're kind of assuming that this is going to do okay. And I think, you know, based on his reputation or just his likability, I think people have, you know, followed his career away from Games Workshop. So this is a Kickstarter.
Kickstarter. Okay, fair enough. Well, I got to say, Kickstarter, I think that's kind of what Kickstarter is for, right? My feeling. Definitely. I would not, or we would not be able to make this thing otherwise. We think a lot of people would still like it, contribute to make it a reality, and... Yeah, I think that's pretty cool. And kind of like we were talking about before the cast, if you have a large or if you've curated like a large social media presence or audience, then that's taken a lot of work. And thankfully, people have kind of followed him to where he's gone to something new. And then you already have this base to work from to launch a new product. So,
right. No, that's a good point. And if this is, you know, like a tool specifically that, you know, he's, you know, honing or you know, at least giving his preferences on, it's going to, it's going to give you some variety, you know, as far as what's out there and what to choose. Yeah, and interesting going with dropper bottles when the paint pot is all that he used for.
I'm not going to rag on GW anymore, but looking at the evolution of that paint pot, from like the old like hexagonal flip top to then the round one to then the, like, I'm sure I still have paints at my parents' place from that old hexagonal one that are still good.
Right.
Where that screw cap, like, you put that thing on wrong, it dried out in a day.
Yeah. It's
and also the couple times when you got an elbow wrong and you just lost all of your $10 paint. You're just like, where dropper bottles are the way to go. You're just like, oop, a drop came out. All right, I'm fine. Yeah,
that's true. So take a look. We'll put a link in the description for the Too Thin Coats Kickstarter if you want to see what that paint range looks like and see what the prices are going to be. Yeah, I'm curious if they're going to be produced in the UK or where they're going to be produced. I'm not sure where the company they're working with is based, but that'll say a lot about the price too, how hard it's going to be to get.
Right.
So more on Kickstarter. This is a Kickstarter-heavy episode.
Right.
Ed Greenwood, the creator of Forgotten Realms, is coming out with a new setting.
Okay.
So this is a new campaign setting, which has already raised. So the numbers are just going to keep getting higher and higher. This Kickstarter has already raised $1 million. Okay. And I'll tell you why. I mean, it's pretty evident why.
Greenwood?
Yeah, there you go. So yeah, Ed Greenwood is working with Dragori Games, and they're kickstarting the world of Tanaris. I'm not sure how to pronounce that. I should have just watched the video, the introduction video. So Tanaris, and what they're doing with that. So the kind of theming of it is almost eldritch and dark fantasy to kind of give a variety. And eldritch and alien themes are kind of throughout this entire setting. And so why would they have $1 million for this setting? Well, it has a lot to do with everyone that is working on this setting. So you not only have Ed Greenwood, who, you know, creator of Forgotten Realms, but Bruce Nethsmith, who did the Ravenloft box. Amy Vorpal, who is working most recently on the Candlekeep Mysteries and Fizban's Treasury of Dragons. Skip Williams, one of the three main designers on 3E. Rich Redmond, Monster Manual 2, Demons and Demigods, like old classics. Anthony Pryor, who developed Scarred Land and has worked on everything from Battletech to Cthulhu. Rob Schwab, who has Shadows of the Demon Lord and Warhammer Fantasy. And Shane Helmsley, creator of Savage Worlds, and Jeff Grubb, Spelljammer, and lead on Dragonlance as well. So it's just like, you know, a really nice selection of people, you know, known names that have done things that people love. So, yeah, them collaborating all on one setting should be, you know,
makes sense to see.
Yeah. So there's your $1 million right there. And so they're trying to create a non-linear experience that will challenge even the most serious adventurers. And there's, of course, a sample on the page itself.
I'll have to go look at this.
Yeah, and they'll add four classes, Dragonblade, Madwalker, Elementalist, and Redeemer, and, of course, new mechanics for those classes. Because you've got to have more classes. It's all
frowning about hard at that Madwalker.
Yeah. Right? Well, yeah.
I don't know.
Angry Stomper?
Well, maybe it is. If that's what it is, okay, cool.
Yeah.
It's a combination of alien themes with that Mad Walker made me think you're just going to play a crazy person and probably poorly too.
Yeah, I wonder. And yeah, powered by insanity.
Madness,
Yeah. So, I'm curious. I'm curious to take a look at this. The artwork looks nice. It's very thematic. I mean, I immediately got what they were trying to do from what they had artwork wise. And I'd be curious to take a look at their little kind of introductory.
I'm actually going to have to go. I'll actually have to go look at this too. Not because I'm going to buy anything that's 5e related, because I'm kind of done with that. But if this is 5e compatible, I want to know if it's more of a, here's kind of a third party setting for D&D 5e, mm-hmm. or if it's more of a here's a game kind of that's mostly powered by 5e.
Right, more like a Dark Sun setting or even like, you know, Spelljammer or whatever. Yeah. Like, yeah, things that you changes it up enough that you're just like, yeah, I don't feel.
Right. Part of that is because, like, last episode, you're talking about classes and all the subclasses and races. And I just think for games where those things are packaged, mm-hmm. that's the only way you can present new material. Right? Yeah. Like, one of the more recent supplements started to break out those racial abilities, right, where you could kind of pick and choose.
Yeah, yeah.
But largely, it's you choose a class, you get all these little widgets and gizmos within the class that are balanced within it, as well as with all the other ones. And the only way to kind of ensure you get appropriately sized packages is to present the package deal as a class, right? Which means you have to keep cranking out more of them. Instead of like,
no, that's again a good
here's
point.
Here's a feat. Here's an extra little talent. Here's an extra little perk. Mm-hmm. No, it's got to be like the whole package thing.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I didn't talk about this last week, but that was the thing I was thinking about is that's for creating a new character, you know, for most part. And so they're missing a lot of players because if you're involved in an ongoing campaign and you've got a character, it's like, oh, I want to, you know, reroll this character. Yeah. So it's that seems a little odd to, I mean, I guess there's all kinds of like fussing with multi-classing and stuff that you could do or negotiate with your DM if you want access to some.
Or you just say, we'll put this game on hiatus and try out this new stuff or you're playing another game. But yeah, it's, that is a consideration where you almost have to have a new character.
Right.
But for this tenorist thing, I'm just kind of
curious. I mean, there's really big names, and I would like to see the quality of the work. Like, if it's really like, oh, this is, this is exactly what we've been missing. I don't know.
I wonder what they mean by that non-linear.
Maybe. Well, it might be because if you're dealing with kind of Eldritch and aliens, it may be like, you know, shifting in time or just like, you know, things can be, you know, maybe more like, you know, Call of Cthulhu, you can be actually jumping around to, you know, specific events and things that are happening, and it's not it doesn't feel like a progression. You don't feel railroaded because you're just like engaging with these mysteries or these strange events.
Or you feel railroaded because at certain points you are forced to go to other points. Right? You're like, okay, we'll do that, and jumping back in time, and jumping forward again. So it could be, I don't know, I'm just kind of somewhat skeptical. I'm not all that impressed with Forgotten Realms. It's like the blandest,
D&D, don't listen, cover D&D your ears
setting then. Ever, right? It's like one of those kitchen sink things. So I'm wondering if this is going to be similar. I was listening for what kind of made it distinct. I'm just kind of like, this. I heard a lot of buzzwords. And my cynical self is not entirely sure they're going to be kind of kept, right? Or this kind of sounds a bit to me like Numenera, where everything's going to be so revolutionary and just like. Anyway,
So a link I shall put in the description. And I'll get these up quick so you can see, you know, maybe the end of some of these. But most of them have been going on for a month. So
everybody missed my positivity, didn't they?
All right. But $1 million on Kickstarter. That's chump change.
Right. That's nothing.
Up for tabletop? What are they even doing? Amateur hour. All of these, like, you know, esteemed, you know, veterans of the industry, and they only get $1 million.
Right.
Well, hey, we got Avatar Legends for the tabletop. And it's probably at the time of recording, it's surpassed
10 million.
Yeah, 10 million. And it's still got time. So, So this is a monster that's sitting now in the lap of Magpie Games. So it's interesting. So, Dicebreaker did an interview with Magpie and was kind of talking about how are you guys handling this, and, you know, what's kind of what's up, because Avatar is a Viacom CBS property. You couldn't be dealing with a huger media company, so their approval process and things must be not fun at all.
Must be rigid as hell.
So that means, you know, they're restricted as far as, you know, stretch goals and things that they can add and things they can promise. So they're really, really trying to overpromise it or underpromise. That's the thing that they're emphasizing, that originally, when they planned this crowdfunding project, 25 stretch goals, that's it. And we'll hit those at 3 million. So they're at 10 million and they've been long past all of those. And Kickstarter backers are just used to this like weird escalating thing, right. And they love this frenzy of and more and more, and yeah. Now it's going to be, you know, exotic wood boxes and metal dice, and you know, and it just keeps, you know, rolling out. And so I would be curious to support this, like, for a dollar, just to read what's going on in the comments, and if they've steered into this negative, like, you're not giving us enough, and we're giving you $10 million, we want more, because Kickstarter tends to do that. They tend to be really unsatisfied without these, like, you know, fiery explosions at the end of these campaigns, where people are, you know, promised the world, and you know, the company can't afford that. So they're basically talking about. So this campaign has 10 full-timers plus their contributors working on it. And the fulfillment of this is 10 times larger than anything Magpie has ever done. Right. Yep. So their previous Kickstarter was the tabletop adaption of Root, the board game Root.
Okay. Yep.
And that was a $600,000 project. So yeah, they're dealing with a much bigger situation than before. And they're not, you know, they're not Wizards of the Coast. They're not Paizo. They're not, you know, Hasbro. It's really funny that this license, this such a big license, went to a smaller company, because, you know, this is a scale you would expect that, you know, Hasbro or somebody else would have taken a look at.
There's a couple. I'm seeing chatter about this on like Twitter, which is pretty much the only place I stay now. And looking at this from like a couple different angles. One, like, I like the games Magpie puts out.
Mm-hmm.
They did the really good supplements for Dungeon World, that Last Life and Last Age of Angel's Kite. They also did Masks.
Mm-hmm.
They did Bluebeard's Bride. So they've done a lot of like games that I like. I have some quibbles with some of the things that the people who run it have done. But like what you said, okay, it's kind of funny that this didn't go to Hasbro. Right? The flip side of that is, at least in indie circles discussion, there seems to be this idea that you've got like WotC and everybody else, which is obviously not the case anymore, because you like someone pointed out, Magpie Games had the money, or at least the clout or the capital, whatever, to secure an Avatar license.
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
They're not an indie company, right? Like,
I
sure as don't have money to secure a kind of like IP contract like that.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So like there's a discussion about, okay, when does indie stop becoming indie? Because Magpie is definitely not indie anymore, right? They're kind of like up there with Evil Hat, right? Which does Fate, or possibly even more.
Right.
Then there was discussion about, okay, great. You've hit $10 million now. Something that wasn't brought up in that article, as far as I could see, was the pay rate that contributors are getting.
Yeah.
Right? Which is, I don't know if it's sketchy, but like someone else pointed out, okay, this is CBS Viacom. You know there was like an airtight contract. So payment rates may have been set in that initial contract. And regardless of what the Kickstarter made, that's not changing. Right, which is kind of a shame, because at what point past your goal do you go, time to bump up everybody's pay, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
They did address that in a little bit concerning way towards the end of the article. This is a big thing to have to deal with. And the one thing that's unique about this is not going to be, you know, a 5e rebrand.
This
is Powered by the Apocalypse. So an IP of that popularity, using the Powered by Apocalypse World system, is going to bring in a lot of people that may have only ever played 5e if they played a tabletop. So that is one really good thing, because people are going to see new mechanics and new ways to play a game with only 2 6-sided dice that are, you know, very satisfying and probably match this world and setting really well.
One would hope. That sounds like faint praise from Magpie. Like, I like all the other stuff they've done, and they've done amazing stuff with Dungeon World Masks and Bluebeard's Bride, like I said, all of which are PBTA games. So based on that, I have no reason to doubt that it won't match the Avatar world very well. I've watched 0 episodes of Avatar and Korra, which is also supposedly in here as well.
Oh,
like,
wow.
That's why it's Legends. Like, I believe you have the different 3 or 4 different eras of play in this. But yeah, I don't know. Like, what I'm just like we talked about with like the Cortex Prime powered Dragon Prince of a show that, again, I couldn't get through. Like, that's not as big as Avatar, but that's another show with a large fan base with a game that is not D&D.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm overwhelmingly happy to see something of this size potentially bring people in with a game that's not a fucking D20.
Mm-hmm, Do you think there'll be some disappointment? Do you think some people will be like, this just isn't enough crunch, this isn't enough game for me? If they've only come
I'm sure, because you can't please everybody.
Yeah, because I mean,
there's going to be.
And this is a lot of customers. Like, this is a lot of people that, and maybe some people that aren't really even tabletop gamers.
Probably not.
That, yeah, just like the setting, you're just like the characters and want as much source, you know, based on that universe as possible.
But what you brought up with the stretch goals, I think a counterpoint to that, having 25 stretch goals kind of like ready. Yes, on the one hand, plan out your stretch goals before you launch the campaign, because otherwise you'll run into the problem that Ogre had,
where
you just overpromise and you lose money because you now can't, or you don't have a box big enough to ship all the crap you promised.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, right.
So I understand that. But someone also pointed out 25 stretch goals at 3 million. They pretty much, this feels a bit more like a pre-order rather than a Kickstarter. Like, we know we're going to hit this.
Yeah,
like, we've planned this thing out. So I realize it's kind of, it's a gray zone. Like, at what point does being smart become kind of over-planning and knowing you're going to hit this? Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. And we talked about that before, taking these big IPs to Kickstarter. It's like, you know, Free League has done a nice job of, when they have a big IP, they just release it because they know it's got built-in success, a built-in audience. You didn't really need to take Avatar to Kickstarter because, you know, you're not printing. I mean, I haven't looked at everything that they're doing for this, but they're not printing a board game. There's not like multiple, you know, different focuses. It's just publishing books and supporting
materials. It's all the like extra little whiz bangs and tokens and dice and stuff like that. But I know what you're saying. Yeah.
So it's I don't know if this was necessarily, and it's odd that Viacom CBS was like, oh yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Whatever Kickstarter is, like, you know, it's an odd.
I don't know. Do you think Viacom CBS went kind of like, because you know they approved all those Kickstarter things before. So do you think it's some, I don't know. Do you think it's some CEO going, not really understanding what an RPG is and thinking a game needs all these extra components? Or do you think it's kind of a more cynical approach of the CEOs going, milk customers for all they're worth because we know nerds like to collect shit. Put a lot of it in there.
And they may have just been looking at the numbers for tabletops because they just keep going up. Yep. Like, tabletop is huge on Kickstarter. So it's a good place to do it. They've got the, you know, best built-in audience. And I don't know. But they made this deal in 2020 and its fulfillment is 2022. And it may be pretty strict, you know, as far as like they're going to get that money. That money's held. They're going to get that money dispersed to them. But are they going to come anywhere near a 2022 goal? Because, I mean, there's a lot of stuff.
According to that Dicebreaker article.
Yeah. They
are requesting stuff at large enough volume where that kind of opens up supply chains to them that indies and smaller people
don't have access
to. And while it's not a non-factor, according to that article, they've largely been able to absorb kind of any problems due to pandemic and shipping logistic problems.
Yeah, because they definitely bragged of like early logistical planning and upgrading to the distribution infrastructure and stuff. But stuff still happens. But
stuff still happens. Yeah.
But this is going to be like their biggest, you know, printing bill ever. They said it's like a 7-figure, you know, print job that they're going to be paying for. And hopefully they've got good enough relationships with all the people that are producing parts that nothing's going to fall through. But and they did also have to, and this happens inevitably with Kickstarters that are producing things with different manufacturers and having to put them together in a box. They're saying there's a tier where you're going to get some now, some later. Yeah. Like, they have to break up the shipping into waves because it's just not going to work. And the thing I think they even admit is the biggest part of the success, the IP is strong and they advertise the hell out of it. So anybody, maybe people that never even backed a Kickstarter before, interested about in Avatar. So the thing you're talking about with compensation, so they're hitting 10 million and they probably, everything is, you know, ironclad contracts. Yeah, they are all set, like how everything is going to go. They're saying labor justice is so central to our work that I think it's a little weird for us to proclaim that we're doing this thing, because it's something we shoot for every single day. Labor justice doesn't sound like it's going to buy a lot of food. And it's like, because then they don't talk about compensation. They just talk about honoring their contributions, honoring the artists and writers' contributions. How do we appropriately honor these things? And that does not sound like money, but
it doesn't. And yeah. I think at the end of the article, mm-hmm. they mentioned something along the lines of, like, they couldn't get any contributors to go on record mm-hmm. to talk about what their compensation was. And that, for all we know, that's probably like NDA agreements or whatever, like that ironclad mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. contract that they all signed. But I'm pretty sure one person said that they're currently possibly in like negotiations with Magpie to mm-hmm. increase the compensation, and things are moving in a positive direction.
Yeah, that was the only person. Yeah,
I'm hopeful right for that. Doesn't really mean all that much, right? Mm-hmm. And as someone who really believes that TTRPGs people, creators, and should be paid more, and this, you should be able to make a living out of this hobby, I would, if Magpie is able to do it, mm-hmm. because of whatever contract they sign, and they might not be able to, if they're able to, it would be nice for them to go on record and say, "Hey, this did way beyond what we thought it would be.
Yeah.
Here's the amount increase we're paying our contributors," mm-hmm. right? That'd be nice.
Yeah.
I don't think it'll happen, but it would be nice.
Yeah. And they said specifically they wanted to keep compensation out of their stretch goals. So it wasn't, you know, so some indie people have done that where they say, yeah, we're going to give this much more to the writers and artists. So they've kept that out. So that, yeah. And I think it's just because you're dealing with CBS Viacom.
Maybe,
and they're in a different kind of a different level with what they're doing. So yeah, you're right. It's not indie anymore.
It's not. And who knows? Like, I'm sure Magpie's hand is just completely tied mm-hmm. on a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And everybody is saying as much as they are allowed to say without getting in trouble. Because if you're part of a project that just made $10 million, you sure as shit don't want to shoot yourself in the foot.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Have some problems with the licensor. Yeah. Yeah. That would be bad.
I was thinking more on an individual thing. Like, hey, you're that guy that got kicked out of the Avatar team, right? Yeah. Yeah. You don't want to be that. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they probably are trying to just protect this whole thing. But we'll see. I mean, we'll see if they can actually do this, because there's very different expectations. Mm. If you're going to take a big IP on a Kickstarter and have a huge result from it, still, there's very different expectations, because they see $10 million and they're like, wow, you guys are rich now.
Yeah.
They're not thinking, oh, that's, you know, 100,000, you know, customers we have to fulfill to with this, you know, bizarre shipping situation that the world's going through right now. So, yeah, their expenses and the way things are working, it, you know, that's not a huge amount of money for what they have to deliver.
Yep.
So it's not going to, you know, it's going to change maybe the reputation of the company, but it's probably not going to change their finances.
Probably not, because most of the money probably is not going to Magpie. Mm-hmm. Or it is only as a holding so they can print stuff. Yeah.
And like what, 20% goes to Kickstarter, whatever their cut is? They're just, they're loving that.
No idea. Yeah. But they are loving that. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is kind of a little bit opposite situation of the thing that I was talking about last week with the Blades in the Dark
TV
series.
TV show,
yeah. So I was worried about, you know, people starting to mine tabletop for, you know, inspiration for television dramas or movies or whatever. But this is definitely the opposite of like shooting these big IPs. I mean, if Avatar is this big, imagine what a SpongeBob RPG would bring in.
Maybe.
Same company. CBS Viacom is gonna be like, hey, we got it all. But so it's an odd thing that we're seeing going on tabletop, invasion of these like real mainstream, like uber popular properties that are using indie game systems.
I'm curious to see what's going to happen with this. Like I said, I'm pleased that we're hopefully like one of the positives to hopefully come out of this is we start seeing the stranglehold that D&D has in terms of a system on the hobby start to crumble a little bit, right? Like now these other systems are kind of being elevated to the point where there's multiple viable ways to enter the hobby. Yeah, and
No, that's true.
I explained that very poorly, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, and when the IP is big enough, I think we kind of touched on this previously. When IP is big enough, people aren't what system is it? They're just like, I want to play the you know, the Avatar game. Yeah. So however you play that, let's give me the rule book, you know. Yeah. So they're not even going to know or you know care. Okay, this is the dice we use. These are the rules we use. That's the Avatar game. Yeah. Yeah. So that'll be an interesting way to kind of diversify. You know what people are doing on tabletop, but I don't know. I don't know if it's a good thing.
We'll just have to wait and see.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, this will be fun to follow, and I am really tempted to put a dollar in just to watch the shit show. If they fail,
the comments.
They fail the fulfillment and just watch, because Kickstarters get vicious. Yeah, people are just all over the place, because all of a sudden there's all these like experts on, you know, offset printing, and you know, well, actually here's a you know, GPS map of the shipping routes, and you get people doing crazy stuff just to you know, disrupt.
Well, I'm sure I have also only kicked in a dollar.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. They got that dollar just to disrupt. Yeah, so we'll see. And you know, this also influences maybe people's you know, kind of view or, you know, affects the reputation of the IP as well. Yeah. So if this goes really well, everyone's happy with the game, everyone's, you know, it gets fulfilled, it may grow that brand, and we may see, or we're already going to see like a live action series or something. Netflix, I think, is doing something. But so it may be good. But if this goes really, really poorly and a lot of people feel burned, you know, it could hurt, like, you know, future graphic novels or, you know, future projects. So you don't know. You don't know what. Kickstarter has it's just a really weird dynamic. And I think it works better at smaller scale. I mean, the company loves these big scale projects, but I think it does. Yeah, it works better at a smaller scale. So we'll see where all this goes. So that's it for the Kickstarter episode. That was a little bit too much of that. But just a lot of and so obviously people are seeing these numbers now and be like, yeah, maybe we should put something out.
You know, I'm sure,
there.
Yeah.
And there's people putting stuff together. I'm still surprised. We're not even out of the pandemic. And
no, we're not. We're not going to be anytime soon either.
Yeah, and people are still pushing so hard for this kind of stuff that's really reliant on the global market and global manufacturing and everything to support this. It's just, I don't know. It's really surprising how hard these companies are pushing at this time. But good for Powered by the Apocalypse. I'm happy to see. Mm-hmm. Happy to see that. So that's it for this week. So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always, Hivemind, HYVEMYND, where I've compressed the card hammer game into Avalon Hill style 1-inch by 1-inch tokens.
Really? Yeah. Oh, wow.
So we'll see how that works out.
Nice. Yeah. So do you need like a jeweler's loop to
read
the
stats? I actually printed them out, and like, we're both marginally old. I'm still pretty happy at how clear the information is on 1-inch by 1-inch.
But where's that epic art going to go?
It's off. Right. Like, that's what it is. Yeah, it's just like a little, little icon thing.
Right. Yeah. Nice. Cool. Nice. Yeah, I think that's a good move, though. And I think that makes like a, you know, a print and play, or even
that's
like
what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Or I'm looking at GameCrafter again, because tokens and chits are real cheap to produce.
Nice.
It's like
nice.
The boards and the box that pushed the price up. But anyway.
Oh, very cool.
So how about you?
So I do a weekly single panel gag cartoon that I live stream. So Abuse Cartoons on Twitch and YouTube, same places you're finding us now. And and if you'd like to support what's going on with Upturned Table, please visit upturntable.com for everything that we're working on. And you can support, become a weakling and support this show by going to patreon.com/upturntable. And something that's available exclusively on Patreon at the moment that may, depending on how things go, may become a regular series on the YouTube channel, is I did audio fiction the same way that I produced the lore series.
Okay.
I'm doing audio fiction of all of the Dark Eden fiction.
Ooh,
that's
cool.
In the Warzone books. Yeah, nice. So the Warzone books has some really nice kind of immersive fiction that they use to give you the setting and also the relationships between the tribes. So I did a reading of those with sound effects and music. And they work really well because they're interconnected stories.
Oh, cool.
So it's really cool. The events of each story, you're like, so it works out pretty well. So there's four of those. And so those are going up on the Patreon. If you'd like to hear those, please become a patron, and they may eventually find their way onto the YouTube. So
great.
Yeah. So Mutant Chronicles audio fiction.
Cool.
All right. That's it for this week. We'll be doing this again next week.
Later, mortals.
Goodbye.